microphones and make a podcast. Two microphones and you make a podcast.
And this is Mary Beth.
Welcome to the Modern Yoga Podcast. Today's very special guest, I'm super excited to announce, is Dave Hoffman.
Who?
Dave Hoffman.
Never Joy- heard of him.
In case you didn't understand that, because Joyce has her sexy voice on this week.
I do.
Dave Hoffman.
Should I use my sexy voice?
Do you have a sexy voice?
I don't know.
Do you have like a bedroom voice?
Well, it's not nighttime. So.
Is your wife going to be listening to this?
Probably, and she's probably rolling her eyes right now.
Is Dave Hoffman the guy who drove Kit?
No, that was David Hasselhoff.
Oh, sorry.
No resemblance. To the car or the guy?
I'm sorry, Dave. Could you put on a red Speedo?
No.
In your Prius?
Okay. You guys didn't tell me you're going to torture me like this.
We didn't know.
Dave, if you had listened to more episodes than you have of our podcast, you would know that torture is definitely part of it.
I'll roll with it.
Good.
But I may dish it back, too.
That's okay. So Dave has been practicing yoga with us pretty much, well, maybe about a month after you retired, right?
Right. Last October. End of October. So November I started.
That was your plan. You were going to do yoga after you retired.
Well, Carrie came here for like 3 years ahead of time, and she always wanted me to come. And I would, when I was working from home, I did videos. That's how I learned yoga, the P90X yoga program, Yoga X, I think it was called, or Yoga with Adrian. So that's where I learned. In the privacy of my own home, so I just, me and my dog could see what I was doing.
I always tell people Yoga with Adrian is a great entree. It's understandable, normal, you get all the basics, she's really great. And the dog is in the video.
Oh, yes, right, Benji. So, after I retired, I made good on my promise, and I started. And I thought once a week, after I did the beginner special was be enough. And then I found out once a week wasn't enough. So now I'm an unlimited member, and I really enjoy it. And actually, it's helped me out a lot. I can't run much anymore because I have arthritis in my left knee. So hot power yoga is kind of taking over from that, so replacing that. And I've benefited greatly from it. So
you practice like a 3 or 4 days a week, right?
About, yeah.
And you do hot power yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the infrared heat feels good for your arthritis?
That part doesn't really bother me. The heat does make me wilt. As you know, I get the spot by the door and wait for it to be open.
It makes him wilt. That's cute.
Well, sweat like a pig? Is that
that's
better?
Okay. That's, a little more.
How does it help your knee? I'm asking because we get this question quite a bit.
I guess I don't have it that bad yet that I need heat on it. Just the stretching from yoga helps it out quite a bit. And I'm just tight anyway in my legs. And so I really found yoga's benefiting me quite a bit. So I'm a hardcore member now.
Yes, you are.
Mm. Now, do you and your wife come together and practice together or... Do you come at separate classes as it's convenient?
We do both. I'm retired, so I have more flexibility. Mm-hmm. But, we often come together, especially on the weekends.
Then we have – that's what she said. Then we have we have some couples that come to the same class, like Tom and Pat come to my noon class, but they arrive in separate cars. They do not put their mats near each other. It's kind of amusing.
A lot of couples, whether they're married or not, don't practice next to each other. So Dave and Carrie – do practice next to each other.
And I've also seen sometimes when a couple does practice together, whether they're married or not, sometimes in Shavasana, when everybody's just kind of laid out, their fingers will touch or they'll even hold hands. And then I try and take a picture and send it to them because it's so sweet.
I always put a cold towel over the held hands. So now everybody's going to hold their hands.
Well, I try to not carry over trying to interfere with their practice sometimes, like tickle her foot.
Well, that's what husbands are for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Apparently.
So, The way Dave made it onto the show, there was a tryout.
No, I paid money.
I was going to say, did we auction this off?
But Dave had approached me and said, I've had all these questions, and I've been meaning to put them in your podcast suggestion box or send them to you or whatever. And I told him I said, why don't you write them all down and we'll go through them and see if some belong in the suggestion box anonymously or...
And then under the category of be careful what you ask for.
Right, here he is.
We have an email that initially has 44 questions.
So I think originally these questions were just for us to talk about on our podcast, but I was like, come on to
we
the
reeled
podcast,
him in.
Dave.
We reeled him in.
And Dave is nice enough to come to the recording studios in Brecksville.
The posh recording studios
and
in Brecksville.
And I got to see how sausage is made after setting up of this.
Oh, it's sausage, all right, when our engineer James is in charge of fixing our situation.
So, yeah, these questions would pop up during practice or sometimes in the middle of the night. Actually, I got up at 1 o'clock in the morning to type a few more in that came to me in the middle of the night. My dog wakes me up to go out to go to the bathroom. So, yeah, or sometimes in the shower question. I have an engineering brain, right? So I'm always thinking.
And that's where the best thinking happens is when it's not occupied with something else, pops
when you're
up.
Not trying. Right. It's just like, oh,
yeah,
I'm going to ask this.
So, but the fact is, these are resonant questions that I think a lot of people, we've heard from other people. There's things that pop up routinely for people, especially as beginners. I love that you call this beginner's mind questions about yoga from a beginner.
So as I mentioned, Dave came up with 44 questions, and he said that he's got tons more. So let's dive in.
So you want me to read
go
them
ahead.
To you?
Yeah,
remember,
sure.
Never dive into the shallow end. Dive into the deep end.
You want to start with 44 and go backwards? Okay, go.
Oh, he's an engineer. That might mess with him.
Oh, yeah, it would. Yeah. It would totally screw me up.
Backwards.
All right. So what is your yoga origin story? How did you get into yoga? When did you want to become a yoga instructor and why?
He hasn't listened.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Let me reference, send you to podcast number...
podcast number one, I believe, I think.
Yeah.
I think
podcast
the very first podcast where it all started. So right off the bat, we are giving Dave a demerit for not listening. But I would say...
I'll keep
question.
A score, minus one.
Do keep score.
Plus one, Joyce and Mary Beth.
I think that the short answer is, and it's probably for both of us, is that when we crossed paths with yoga, it changed our lives significantly for the better.
For sure. And to kind of give the brief story.
Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah. Which we're incapable of doing. Mary Beth came for the yoga, I came for the workout, and we both ended up kind of in the same place. I was a competitive figure skater and was a studio opened by my house. I was very curious, so I started yoga. In two sentences, what would you say?
Well, I was a competitive napper and TV watcher.
No.
And
were you like winning medals?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Number one in the country. I went to yoga, not that I was looking for yoga. There was a yoga class at the place where I was going to work out. I kind of did whatever was there. Spin was one night. Yoga was Wednesday night. And I fell in love with my yoga instructor and the yoga practice. And pretty soon, the rest was history. And it was multi times a week.
And so how long into your practice do you, like how many years did you practice before you decided to take teacher training?
Like eight, long time. I never really planned on taking teacher training. It just sort of came accidentally too. And like many teachers will tell you, I didn't really take it to be a yoga teacher. I took it because I so loved yoga. I just wanted to steep myself in all sorts of yoga BS. But then teaching opportunities came up pretty quickly when I got out of training and I enjoy it. So there you have it. How about you?
It was probably about 7 or 8 years into my practice as well. But James and I had already started floating the idea around of opening our own yoga studio. And this is a long conversation, but we didn't think that if we did open a studio, we didn't think that we would be the premier teachers. We thought that we would be teaching. But
premier
not,
teachers.
Not
I love
quite
that.
As well, you know, that sounds a little egocentric, and it's not. But
No.
It just kind of happens when you own the studio, but we just didn't think that we would be teaching as much. We thought we would be focused more on the business, and now we're doing both.
Yes, so, all the time.
All the time.
To digress, right during the first question, what we may not have prepared you for, Dave, is that I have hot flashes. So at points mm-hmm. like you just saw, the hat just came off, the hair went up. Sometimes I begin to undress, uh-huh, but I would warn uh-huh. you before that happened.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So that's why this is a podcast. At the end of
exactly,
it, you guys are nude
exactly.
or what?
I have a bod for radio. And in a few minutes, she might be wrapped up in these blankets too, mm-hmm. so you just never know.
It's okay. a very hot, cold situation.
Okay, so if that's it on that, I'll have to go back to podcast one mm-hmm. and listen to it as my homework. So there is a flow to these questions. At the beginning is like beginning stuff, right? How do you get into it and all that? And I am a grandfather now, two mm-hmm. young grand boys. And so the question comes up, you know, they're only less than a year old or coming up on a year old in 9 months. But at what age do or should children begin a regular yoga practice? What's the earliest you've guys seen someone, a kid, come do practice
well,
yoga?
Well, our granddaughter is two, and we've been teaching her to use her breath when she gets mad. And it's very cute because she goes...
Do you teach her to say, hold your breath? So.
We don't say hold your breath, but we tell her to breathe. And we've shown her how to okay. take a deep breath. And she's, you know, she's little and super cute and all angry. And she's like, and so I feel like she's starting. But, you know, because the yoga practice is bigger than just poses. And so she's already cultivating a little bit of breath awareness.
I was going to say, as for the physical poses or a yoga practice, like mm-hmm. a formal time on the mat, you know, my yoga teacher, Jane, used to always say, everybody's been doing yoga their whole life. Mm-hmm. They just didn't know they were calling it that. So anything you do with small children from whatever age that involves mindfulness yeah. or take a deep breath. In fact, my niece's little girl, Lofton, four, I think, at the time, or maybe even three, said to her mother, when her mother was, you know, correcting her, quote unquote, mm-hmm. maybe yelling at her, she said, you need to take a breath. To her mother, she said, you need to take a breath.
That's awesome.
Katie said, child, you need to take a breath. I'm going to walk away. But I know my granddaughter, who's big, old, 8.5-year-old now, but... there's lots of videos for kids, and even in school or aftercare, they start things like that. There's a lot of people that specialize in kids yoga. So,
yeah, kids yoga is a little bit different, too, than what you practice. And it changes rapidly with age and maturity. So I've seen kids yoga done very well with a book, and mm-hmm. the instructor read this story that was written for kids yoga, and at certain points they would stop to fly like an airplane, and so all the kids were running mm-hmm. around the studio with their arms out, or roar like a bear, or they talk about their dogs. Yeah,
I think to introduce concepts, I would say there's never
yeah
not no one's too young.
Yeah, I have to take that back, too. I said we're just under a year old now, and I have got pictures of them in mm-hmm. yoga poses. Happy baby!
Well, right?
There
that's why we call...
They do the best happy baby.
Oh, they do.
They do the best happy baby, and that's why I never do happy baby without thinking of the little ones. And yeah. then sometimes I'll even say, and I've said this on the podcast before, if you really watch a happy baby doing a happy baby, what mm-hmm. happens next? They put their toes in their mouth.
That's right. Everything
so
goes in there.
I try and not encourage the class to put their toes in their mouth, but it's always an option.
I didn't know where you're going with what happens next, because there's
I know,
of
there's
that
other things that could happen. But in general, if you do watch a baby doing that, once they find their feet and they giggle mm-hmm. and they hang out pulling on them, usually a big toe goes into the
yeah.
mouth.
I think that's a physical impossibility for me. So
we'll get you there, Dave.
We'll try. We'll take pictures.
I'm only a year in, so okay. So if I move too fast, let me know. But moving right along, let's
He's going to keep us on task.
Other extreme, is there an age when you become too old for yoga?
No.
Never.
Never.
How old was that famous, was her name Tao? Tao that just passed away in these last few years?
Was she 98? Oh, she 100?
She might have been over 100, yeah.
I would look it up on this computer, but I'm afraid to touch it, James.
And again, part of the deal is not thinking of yoga as the 1-hour exercise class specifically, but the other precepts of yoga. The poses, yes, but the breath, the mindfulness, the...
Well, exactly what we're talking about with kids, mm-hmm. you know, and one of the great things about yoga is that it is accessible at any age. And for somebody, for the yogi who's been practicing for decades and they're still practicing in their 90s, I wouldn't be surprised to see them in a hot power class doing their version of that practice. Mm-hmm. Because the practice is so much greater than poses.
Than following along in the class, yeah.
Right.
That's good to hear, because I feel bad when I can't do certain poses at my age, 61. Mm-hmm. I can't do hero pose or camel. My legs won't go that
That's
way.
Okay.
So I figured, okay, I won't do that then.
That's exactly the right answer, because mm-hmm. there are things you can work on. It's just a flexibility issue or something, but there are things that definitely
just don't
you
work
shouldn't work
body.
On. Our bodies are all very different.
Well, and like chair yoga, for example, it's so good for people of, I don't want to say a certain age, but like if you have blood
people old enough
issues,
to get free coffee at Wendy's,
people enough to get free coffee at Wendy's. But if you have blood pressure issues or, like any kind of, I don't know, heart issues, like where you don't want to be standing up and sitting or folding mm-hmm. down, the lowest you're going to get in a chair yoga class is about here as far as inversions go, which for all of you podcasters, I'm sitting in a folding chair and I did ragdoll with basically my head kind of made it maybe to my knees. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you're never going to have your head far under your heart, which may be something that, you know, I know for my dad that would have kept him safe or safer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And as you age, it's a good question, because aside from arthritis and those kind of physical limitations, joint replacements and stuff like that, but yeah, inversion can mean something different for your blood pressure if you have mm-hmm. eye pressure issues, glaucoma, or if yep. you've had eye surgery. So those are all things to be aware of as you age.
And even on, you know, beyond just aging, that's why chair yoga is so good, period, like, because there's other people who have, you know, people that aren't above a certain age that deal with these issues. So
I got great feedback yesterday on our chair yoga class from my noon slow flow. A couple of the ladies came and they really put it together and realized how in the chair you cannot fall back on what you're used to falling back on.
Yep.
So they were really challenged in a chair class. These are ladies, maybe 50s. I mean, not
right.
Yeah, but they said it's no joke. It's not easier because now you're finding a different way to compensate for some of these movements. Hmm. You don't have your normal stance.
Well, I used to joke that Jane used to teach power chair.
She'd pick up the chair, lift it over your head, bring it back
down.
Let's
hold this for 8 minutes.
I'll have to try that.
Okay. Listen, Dave, I might outweigh you, so I'm just going to go ahead and keep talking. I digress a lot, and here's going to be a digression or a diversion. I saw a headline today that a man, I think in Myrtle Beach at a hotel, was trying to do a handstand on the balcony, probably for an Instagram moment, and it ended very poorly.
Really?
Yes.
Yikes.
It was a fatal ending.
That's what you interrupted for.
Yes.
And that deals pertains to yoga how?
Well,
it's not
he
on
was,
this list of questions.
It's You're right. Digressing. It's not on the list of questions. It's just a digression is part of the
you
deal.
You make me want to digress.
Oh, well, that's...
Your turn next.
That sounds
next
sexy question. When a woman in a raspy voice says, you make me want to digress.
Well, I have a... I learned at softball last night that somebody was sharing a story of how... And stop me if you guys read this, but
Dave, you can't stop her.
Two people got arrested at Cedar Point.
Oh no!
Oh,
did
yes,
you read
I
this?
Read this story,
yeah.
Yes.
Was there a sexual incident on a ride?
Yeah, they were 30. No, in line or something like that.
They were on a Ferris wheel. I heard or something.
Oh, that's
one of those
a different
kinds of,
one.
Oh, really?
Oh,
there's
more.
There's
a new one. Oh, yeah, God. And some 17-year-old videotaped it. So it's like now a misdemeanor because it was in front of a minor and the minor gave the video to the authorities.
Where can we find this on the internet?
The couple said that they've been, yeah, newly dating and they're very affectionate towards each other.
Oh my gosh.
So anyhow.
Wow.
All right. Well, I'll get a digression in somewhere. Okay, number four. And this is part of the reason why I didn't start earlier. It took me, I put Carrie off until, and so yeah, the question is, why don't more men do yoga? And I put it off because I felt awkward coming into
it. So I want to stop you before, or stop us from answering you. Mm-hmm. What did you think was going on in yoga?
A bunch of women doing yoga and old guy trying to do yoga, and I would be out of place.
Out of place in that you couldn't keep up, that you'd look like a creeper.
Well, yeah, yeah.
So all of those things, because those are the things I wrote down after talking to my husband. He's like,
were you talking about yoga?
Yes. He's like, creepy old guy. Like, if there's a 15-year-old in a sports bra doing a wide straddle in front of me, you might feel like a creepy old guy. Mm. And that is expected, right? I mean, it happens. He's just silent, and taking it all in. And then as a woman, I think sometimes men are afraid of being shown up by women. So if they don't participate, then they can't be less good, quote unquote, at a pose than their wife might be. Not saying that about you, Dave, because you seem to be a...
Well, Carrie's better than I, but she's got a 3-year head start, so, but I'm
coming
along.
It's game on, Carrie, game on. But really, what you learn as your practice goes on is that there's no such thing as being better at yoga. It's like having a better hairline or better belly button. It's just yours.
Mm-hmm.
You do have a good hairline, though.
Okay. You do, yeah.
It's the cocoa weeds I ate when I was a kid.
Love cocoa weeds.
Yes.
But that's a very interesting question. Why don't more men do yoga? Because yoga has some of its origin in India, and women weren't allowed to do yoga for a very, very long time. It wasn't until recently that Indian women were allowed to do it, like in the last, I don't know, James would know the exact date, but I would say in the last few decades. And so Indra Devi, so there was a guy named Tirumalai Krishnamachara who...
She just totally made that up.
No, I didn't.
I'm going to Google it.
This is James's favorite guy. But he kind of invented power yoga, or it became what power yoga is now. And this was over 100 years ago that started. And it was kind of like this sort of cross between yoga poses and gymnastics. So I'm sure it's evolved from, I don't know what they were doing originally, but we're not doing gymnastics.
Trying to pull their head out of their ass. That's
why. Well, maybe. But he only trained men. And there was a woman named Indra Devi who convinced him to train her. And it's pretty impressive that she did convince him, because she's a woman, and he never trained a woman, and he made exception for her. And she brought, I'm really summarizing here. James is probably going to.
He won't listen.
Oh, no, he does. I just don't know when. It might be like later. But she brought yoga to Hollywood, or to California, and to Hollywood. But she really started that movement. And so that's probably how it got to be so female-oriented in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I think it's just kind of exactly what you described. I think there's just like this unknown where as I was listening to you talk, it sounded like you ladies are doing something that you inherently understand that I probably don't. And it involves like stretching and doing things that I don't think I can do.
Right. Men are known for being stronger than women physically in some ways, and maybe not as flexible as women. And it also speaks to how reticent we are to be a minority in any situation, in any room. You know, you don't want to be the one that looks different, acts different, is different.
So let me ask you, when you came to your first, maybe not your very first, but your first few yoga classes, was it different than you thought?
Yeah, it was... it wasn't as awkward as I thought. I mean, you have no bias, no judgment up front.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think James made a big point about that because I was nervously joking about, you know, not doing things right or whatever. And then again, I go in my corner. I feel a little more protected back there.
Did you come alone your first time or with your wife?
You know, I don't remember exactly.
That's good. That means you're probably in the same mindset either way.
Yeah. So I think within a week I got over that feeling of nervousness or not fitting in or newbie. You don't want to make a mistake, and you found out you can hang with people. I can do well enough. And and then, I don't even give it a second thought.
But there's nobody saying that you did anything wrong, right? Like that notion of, I don't want to make a mistake. Like that's probably not even in your thought process at all
anymore.
Yeah. Or getting something right or wrong. I remember because it was just like last week, but I came over and just nudged your knee aside and you started laughing and you were like,
You almost knocked me over.
His knee was fine. It wasn't that aggressive. but it was, my point is that you were laughing and you're like, you're knocking me over. It doesn't go that far. And I really wasn't being that aggressive.
But you weren't embarrassed or felt like you were failing.
No. Yeah, he wasn't. It was, you're very comfortable at the studio. And I appreciate that. There was a time probably within the last, I don't know, year and a half where there were two new ladies and it was a mother, daughter, like teenage daughter, college age maybe. And they were coming for their very first time. And they just came to my 9:30 hot power, like a 75-minute hot power class. And I think they were a little overwhelmed. And thank God, like as soon as class was over, they kind of turned around to get some mat spray or something. And Dave was like, oh, hey, do you remember who I'm talking about? I think they're from Australia or something.
Yeah.
And he, like, I watched him. You don't know if he did this on purpose, but I thank you for it. He took the uneasiness down in like T-minus 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like they connected with someone. Dave was like, yeah, this is a tough class. You come back tomorrow at 9:30. And sure enough, they came back tomorrow or the next day at 9:30. And it was really nice to see that.
Going down that road a little, that's so gratifying for us as teachers to see because it happens a lot. Mm-hmm. Somebody just gives somebody that looks new a welcome feeling, unselfconscious welcome feeling, and it just gets better from there.
All right. Well, moving related to the men question is, why isn't there more or any men's yoga clothing or yoga clothes? And like I said, I don't think I would ever buy them or what it would be. I mean, I'm happy with my shorts and
there are some.
So I think you answered your own question in this question, but
I think that men
don't buy them. So that
men are not as easy to persuade to overspend on something cute and trendy. However,
but isn't it functional too?
It is,
and even the generation though
they are. Oh yeah, younger men are, and the expensive. I mean, it's harder to find men's yoga clothes for sure.
Yeah, but what are they? I mean, I don't know if I wear pants to clingy pants.
They do. They'll wear clingy pants or slightly less clingy, right? But still not as loose as like a sweatpant. Okay. But even not to hawk any particular brands or anything, but even the ones that are expensive, let's say people will talk about Lululemon.
Yeah.
The men who have bought a select wardrobe of that cannot stop raving about it. The comfort, the durability.
Yeah. The laundry's right there. James does, like, his shorts are yoga shorts. Hmm.
They have like a bike short insert? We're going to go grab James's shorts, except James isn't in them.
Oh, okay.
These are Vuori's, but there's a liner inside of them.
Joyce, we're getting feedback from Shorts Crinkle.
Why is there a stain?
Well played, Dave. Stain. Well played. Oh, James is going to hate that.
I know. Sorry, James. I just couldn't help
it. Funny. Mm-hmm.
But that's not what I would picture. I mean, that's something I would buy.
Right. But there are long pants.
But when I first read this question, I thought you were maybe specifically referencing our boutique. And we have carried men's stuff, and it just doesn't sell.
It just doesn't sell, yeah.
It'll sell every once in a while, like for in the holiday season where a woman will buy something as a present. But in general, I think it's a little bit hard to get a guy like you to buy something in a yoga boutique mm-hmm. shop.
And I've noticed, my husband is a big golfer. I have male friends who are yoga teachers. There's sort of a hybrid thing that men will do that women don't. Like women, we want our yoga pants and we want our golf and tennis pants and we want our leisure wear. Guys will wear a pant that it might even fasten, like snap and zip or whatever. And it's stretchy and you could wear it for yoga. You could wear it to work. You could wear it to golf.
Well, the stuff that men wear to those different things looks similar. Like we're,
yeah.
Like a tennis skirt isn't necessarily going to work in hot yoga.
I think Dave would look great in a tennis skirt.
I do too.
I don't think so. Well, what about shirts? I mean, and this goes back to an earlier question about being awkward in the studio. I sweat a lot when I get going on hot power yoga. And if I have a shirt on, it just starts getting wet and heavy. Mm-hmm. But I was initially concerned about taking it off. And will people think, creepy old man, sweating like a pig?
Yeah, but if you say something first, we'll put on like some striptease music.
Okay, now I'm never going to take my shirt off.
We have a couple guys that
okay?
do.
Yeah. It's okay to take it off.
Absolutely.
It definitely is, yeah.
And is there any men's yoga shirts then? Or just,
they're just
like those dry fit kind of.
Yeah, that's the kind I wear.
Can I go back into the laundry? You probably have stuff like this. I don't know if the microphone's picking me up. I'll get scolded later. But just sweat wicking again.
Right, I got
James will wear this to other things than yoga.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't.
It's a dress shirt. Yeah. Right. Women wouldn't. There's just it's a very like men are from Mars, women are from Venus thing as far as what we like to buy and wear.
Okay.
But we should, and we've talked about getting now that we're 6.5 years old and like some of these questions, like you're at ease with more of, I think there's the men who are at our studio are more at ease with all of this stuff that is at least the men who practice pretty often. So we might bring some men's clothing back. There's less choices.
A pair of shorts. I'd wear a pair of those shorts.
Yeah. We had, and James still wears them. We had some really, when we were brand new, we had some really nice sweat wicking men's modern yoga shirts. It just said modern yoga across the top. Mm-hmm. Your softball shirt will work, but you have a number on the back.
Yeah, but that's cotton, I think, and I no, it's not.
No, that's a pretty fancy shirt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Dave played softball with us before he started yoga. Did you think that it was going to be a bunch of, I don't know.
No. Your softball team? No, I had no expectations.
Oh, okay, good.
Good thing.
There's a girl, you probably know her, Kristen. I'll throw you under the, you know, Kristen Hare. You probably recognize Kristen, but she started practicing yoga sometime last summer, and I had mentioned in the announcements after class something about softball, and her friend was like, oh, she loves softball, so Kristen started subbing for us, and now she plays for us. And at some point, she looked at me, and she goes, oh, I really have to watch my mouth. I have a potty mouth, and you guys are all yogis, and like I don't want to say the F word. And we were all, every time she's at bat, it's like, get a fucking hit, Kristen. Let's fucking go. It's really funny. That's at least great. To us, it is. The other teams are probably like, why are they picking on this chick?
So she had a stereotype of what a yogi
she
is.
She did. Mm-hmm. That we were all peaceful, like 24/7.
Yeah. And speaking of stereotypes.
Yes.
Question 6.
Yeah.
You read that one.
Is there a correlation between having tattoos and doing yoga? And do you have a tattoo? Again, we've addressed this in another podcast as far as you having a tattoo. Mary Beth does not have any tattoos, and there seems to be more and more of a correlation, but I'm going out without a tattoo, I'm telling you.
I think that this is more of a generational thing. I think that that people just have more tattoos in general right now than where our age range is used to. I used to have a tattoo. I had it removed. It was on my ankle. Had it removed a long time ago. Can't see it.
I'm going to tell you right now that I am a little sexist and ageist about tattoos. I see so many beautiful tattoos in class, and I love them. I like them more on men. I like them on women when they're young and their skin is taut. But as an old lady myself who's now needs that crepe erase or whatever infomercial with Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman is in the middle of the night, I just got a pedicure this morning with my mom, and there was a woman next to me who I don't want to call her a Karen because she's probably like an old Karen, like a Gladys Kravitz type, if you're old enough to remember Gladys Kravitz from Bewitched. You know, like a sort of a frumpy woman, and she had like an aging, sagging, fading tattoo, and I didn't like it. I got to be honest. So I'm mea culpa. It's not right of me.
She could go get it spruced up.
I mean, I don't. Listen, what are you going to do? Lift her kneecap up to her hip bone?
I mean, there's things, artists are very talented.
But it's the skin at a certain age that needs to be redone, not the tattoo.
She's tough.
I like the idea of a tattoo. I just wouldn't know what to get, you know, like skull and crossbones or mom or, you know, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, and that's permanent, right? Mm-hmm. So I like
I'm
getting the temporary
there.
Tattoos. We'll put those on for fun.
Yeah.
Used to do the warrior dash. Remember those things, the mud runs and all that.
Do they still have those?
Not anymore. They're different. They're not warrior. They're something else, like Spartan Run or something.
They turned.
But we used to put temporary tattoos. We used to get all tatted up for those. That's and it was funny. Kind of fun to have, you know, and of course they fade away and go
have
away.
Like a Rambo moment.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I think about getting a tattoo a lot, but I need it to be something that means a lot to me. And I don't want to speak for people, but I sometimes think when people have so many tattoos that they tend to lose value a little bit, you know, because I know when I had mine, I would see things and feel like, oh, that would look great here, or that would look great. I could see how it's got, I don't know if addictive quality is the right term to place to it, but it just becomes easier after mm-hmm. you cross the bridge the first time, you know?
And as you said, it's just so much more common now. And it's no different than me choosing what earrings I'm going to wear or how many holes are in my ear or what bumper stickers or magnets you have on your car. It's just self-expression. So shame on me for what I said, but also it comes out of my mouth, so.
Do you think you would ever do like, would you ever tattoo your eyebrows?
No.
Or your lips?
No.
I think you should.
No. I know plenty of people who are already doing all of that, but I think that is insane.
Okay, I'm going to move off this one before I get somebody in
trouble.
I
love this.
Here.
He's so like anti-conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Now we're just going to have to make it a point to sort of drag him down and make him a little uncomfortable.
I think we have
like seven questions in and you got 33 more to go.
I don't do recreational math, Dave.
Okay. Have you ever considered, say, we're moving along now to the beginning of class. Mm-hmm. Have you ever considered marking spots on the floor and letting people reserve them like is done in theater seats now? Because I want that one by the corner permanently.
So you weren't doing yoga during, or you weren't coming to class during
COVID?
We did have marked
X's,
but not reservable. I like his idea of reservable, yes, and actually, I hate the idea of reservable.
I joke with people that I'm going to sell them a plaque and put their name. There's a couple spots in the room, and yours is one of them for sure. That people go to very, very often, and I'll let her explain because I'm with you. Like why. That spot, if I did sell them, would be very expensive.
Well, the first thing that popped into my head with this question is it's a very good exercise in your yoga practice to go to the spot that is not your spot.
Mm. I see.
Get out of your comfort
zone. Get out of your comfort zone. The poses are going to be different. The teacher's in a different place for you. The sound will be different.
The experience will be different. The yoga will be very real.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I go to the middle of the room on occasion when
somebody's in your spot.
Yeah.
I suspect he's too polite to fight for his spot.
Well, that question's coming up if it's okay to. But what's nice about that spot, you got the wall on one side, you got the pole on the other side, and I suck at balance postures, right? Mm-hmm. So those are strategically mm-hmm. placed. Mm-hmm. And plus, when you open the door, I get that nice breeze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why it's my favorite. And plus, I'm out of the way. The creepy old man's in the corner, so it doesn't scare people.
See, I feel a little bit restricted in that spot because of the wall and the pole. But I do like having the wall and the pole because I don't know, like whether or not you need the wall and the pole for balance, it's there. And sometimes even if like you can do something, I feel like if I put my hand on the wall, I get a different experience and I really like that. So, but I do feel like I'm a little squeezed in over there. I don't know. I like to hear this though. Like it makes that spot very valuable. Like not that you're hiding in the corner, but I like to hear that you're using the wall and the pole and you're like, you know, I can.
And it is a favorite. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think the reservable part would go over, but. Well,
just, so I'll tell you the most popular spots in the room. One is just, I would say the most popular spot is if you're looking at it, it would be just to the left of that stand that we have with the blankets and straps and tennis balls and stuff. Just to the left, I would say probably the second most popular is just to the right of that. And then the spot right inside the window, like not inside the door, but underneath the lobby window.
That's the hottest spot, isn't it?
It's one of the hottest.
And that's what some people want. Like it, that's under the turkey broaster. Those white sort of triangular things are, I call them the turkey broaster, because those are even extra hot, despite the normal heating panels.
The studio in general in Strongsville is hottest near the lobby. And anywhere from the top to the back, probably three or four spots, because the steam is hot and those fans circulate the steam throughout the room, but they tend to pull it really heavy into that corner. So some people fight to be super, super hot. Like Rachel Daw has been on the podcast. She comes in like a hoodie and she leaves in a hoodie. Sometimes she puts a hoodie on in Shavasana, in a 75 minute class. And then, you know, then there are people who go to the opposite side by the outside door because they'll get a breeze. That outside door doesn't seal in the wintertime. That side, maybe not the side, but maybe the last quarter of the room can be 7 to 10 degrees cooler. Now, here in Brecksville, we're about to find out how that's all going to work. And we have windows in both of the studios in Brecksville, and it just makes sense that it's probably going to be a little bit cooler on the window side and not so cool on the interior.
And even outside of the heat, we all have favorite places. You know, somebody is a person who always goes to the left of center. There's some sort of study you can look up that people behave the same way in an empty elevator. When a second and third person get on, this is what people usually do. And I think it's the same with a yoga studio or anywhere you go. Yeah. Like, you sort of are a person, I happen to be a person that tends to go left for whatever reason.
Sounds like, you ever seen the internet thing, men's urinal etiquette?
Why no, Dave? Well, do
I'll
tell.
I'll have to bring a copy of it. But yeah, I mean, when there's a certain number of urinals, and you know, you usually go to maximize the difference. But then there's some trick questions, and I'll save that.
That sounds fun.
Yes, I'll bring.
Yeah, like who's the creep that would go like right next to you if there's six open urinals, right?
Back to the mat. Yeah. I think there are people too who, if they don't get their favorite spot, they're going to want to be in that same row. You know, like if you're always practicing in the back. I'm guessing you would prefer to practice in the back.
Yeah, I never want the front. I don't know why. Because I can't see the instructor, I guess, as well.
And so there are people who practice in the front because they think that, or they have had experiences where they get distracted by people in front of them.
So this way they don't see what's going on behind them.
Yeah. And then there are I don't know that there's anybody who always practices in the middle, because the middle is usually the last place to fill up.
To fill up, yeah.
But there might be. I don't know. It's very, very interesting. And the heels of what Mary Beth said, it's really good to not have a reserve or a place that, you know, we have people who get there 30 minutes early to get their spot.
What of it?
It makes me think of when I worked in corporate America and we had a management team of like, I think 8 or 9 people, and we had a big conference room table, and every Thursday we'd have management meetings and we'd all sit in the same spot, and they weren't assigned. I didn't take over, or maybe I did take over somebody's, you know, when I think my first management position was in marketing. I don't think I took over the former marketing managers. I don't know. Maybe I did. I wasn't.
Well, it's like
there.
the same pew in church, same part
Creatures
of the mall.
Of habit.
Yeah. You go to the same spot.
So what's the etiquette about saving spots? Is it saving one other than your own okay? How about two? How about three? And what's the limit of saving?
I let it go. I don't give people the evil eye about it or anything, but I don't love it.
Yeah, I don't feel like it. I think it's pretty common for somebody to save one other person's spot, but it's pretty rare for them to save a lot of spots. And because it's so rare, it's not really a problem. Like, mm-hmm. I know of one lady who, this was actually really cute. She's got 4 kids, and I think the youngest is in high school and the oldest maybe 25, because this just happened a few years ago. But she practices in the morning all the time, and her husband called a few days before her birthday and said they wanted to surprise her. And so she came, she's always the first one there. She's always, even before I get there at 5, you know, I try to get there at 5:30 in the morning if I teach at 5:45. She's always sitting in the parking lot. She knows who she is. And she comes in and goes to her specific spot. And he asked me to reserve spots around her. And it was I thought there's no way she's not going to know something's up, because here I am at 5:45 rolling, mm-hmm. you know, 4 or 5 other mats out right around her. But she was just...
That sounds like
out.
An awesome surprise.
It
though.
Was, but it was funny because she was like, "What are you guys doing here?
Yeah, who died?
This is my time."
Yeah, exactly. From a strictly social standpoint, I wouldn't love to see somebody saving a bunch, because then I just feel like somebody could walk in the room and feel like they're not. It just takes me back to the high school cafeteria.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and I've seen very rarely. And I'll just preface this, that I don't think the intent was bad, but. Like I've seen, I think you have too, where somebody will ask somebody to move because they need the spot.
Joyce, you're jumping ahead.
Oh, sorry. I'll stop.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll set her up. What's the etiquette about touching or moving someone else's mat stuff, even if it's for their own good?
Death penalty.
Okay.
Well, it depends. If you're just kind of, you know, if somebody... ran out to the bathroom before class and you needed to scoot over to make room for someone else, I don't think it's a big deal to move somebody's water or block over a couple of inches. But if you're literally putting them in a new spot, or what I was just getting to, like if you kind of come in and say, "I have to have this spot."
And it dovetails into his next question. Has anyone fought over a spot in class? And fight might be the wrong word, but yeah, there are people that say, "Hey, can I go there? Because I use the pole in the wall to support blah, blah, blah."
And so they ask.
They ask, but I love that in parentheses here, you've said, "I assume you would be banished." I mean, people don't love it because they probably picked their spot too. And you're like, "Well, but why is your practice more important than my practice if I like the wall or the pole?" So
is push come to shove ever in a class?
No, but wouldn't that be funny? A fight, physical fight in a yoga class?
I've seen people have very frustrated looks when they walk into the studio, like, "Oh my God." But ultimately, I think that it always ends up being okay. Mm-hmm. You know, but I've never seen anything like Mary Beth.
Yeah,
I
practice there. I've just had a person saying, do you mind if I have that spot instead because I use it?" And the other person's sort of like speechless. So, of course, they do it because they're just kind of stunned. Like, who would ask me to move?
And
but they do.
That's gets even tougher to witness and control as in a teaching position. If it's like if a veteran asks somebody brand new, because that's that same thing that you were saying, like, or maybe it was you that like, you don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable. And if somebody's brand new and they get there super early because they're nervous and they get situated, and then somebody comes in and is like basically saying, "You've got my spot." That's hard.
I've seen someone offer to relinquish their spot. I think Carrie and I were separated with someone in between, and we're talking. It wasn't us; it was somebody I knew, and they're talking back and forth. So the person in the middle is like, "Do you guys want to switch? Because I don't want to get in between your
right." Like on an airplane, do you just want to sit next to each other if you're going to talk the whole time?
Yeah, yep.
Well, like I said, we mentioned earlier, a lot of couples don't. They purposely don't practice right next to each other. And
that's interesting to me. I don't know why I wouldn't. I'd always want to be next to Carrie, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it's been since the beginning.
Yeah, there's one of two camps. They're either together on purpose, or they're almost never together.
Yeah. I think in the sense of like not getting too attached to your own spot, that could go along with it. But I don't know, like, there, you know, there's times where I wouldn't mind being away from James, and there's times that I'd like to practice right next to him, you know, so. But we do spend a lot of time together, so there's that.
All right. Now, this one, we're segueing a little bit further into the questions. How do instructors plan class? Do you script it out and write it down ahead of time? Do you make it up on the fly? Do you ever call an audible, like in football, you change it in real time? So
I think my whole class is audible.
Audibles all day, baby. Mm-hmm. Audibles all day.
When you first taught, did you script it out, or did you just make it up as you go along?
I think, speaking just for myself and probably possibly for Joyce, we had such a long practice. Like when you're practicing for a decade before you become a teacher, you've kind of already been teaching in your head. I mean, it's easy to do it as an audible. A person who may have only been practicing yoga a short amount of time and then went to teacher training to become a teacher, there's just a lot less. It's almost like language keeps building, 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 and you can speak a language fluently because you grew up speaking it, kind of thing. Hmm.
I can say that in our teacher training, we teach a specific sequence, and we say right off the bat, we do not think this is the only sequence that you'll teach for the rest of your life. However, we look at it kind of like the ABCs, right? Like you have to know how to say the ABCs before you can sing the ABCs, or you can say the ABCs backwards.
ZYXWV, UTS, RQP, ONM, LKJ, IHG, FED, CBA.
No way.
Wow. Way.
When did you memorize that?
My grandpa taught me that, my poppy, when I was about 5 years old.
See?
Do you know the Swinging the Alphabet song from the Stooges?
No.
B A Bay, B E B, B I Bicky Bi, B O Bo, Bicky Bi Bo, B U Boo. You take the consonants and you swing them against the vowels. Google it. It's a Three
wow.
Stooges episode.
So I'm going to write this down. I'm going to write this down.
C-I, sicky, si, C-O, so, sicky, si, so, C-U, sue, sicky, si, so, sue.
Then that's our clip.
This might be the best guest we've ever had up to this point.
Anyhow.
Excellent Top diversion. That's right. I don't think we can.
Well, that was my diversion, so we each get another one. So.
But you've got to know the alphabet before you can do fancy things like this, right? So if I'm offering you, if I'm trying to push your knee over, knock you over to the side, and I'm worried about what I'm teaching next or where everybody's at, I'm going to lose the class. So we teach the sequence, and it's a very classic sequence that makes a ton of physical sense, right? Mm-hmm. And so that way, teachers, when our teachers graduate from teacher training, they are ready to teach class. There's a lot of other things that happen too. They get a ton of teaching experience, but they are ready to teach off the mat in a sense where they can look at students and carry the class on and not have to worry about like choreographing
or scripting. If they do nothing else, if they don't embellish or go outside of that, it's solid.
It's very, very solid.
Period. So the rest then is gravy.
So, yes. And so the gravy, the embellishments, the enhancements, the things that make every class a little bit unique, potentially, aren't really that far off the script. And as Mary Beth mentioned, she absorbed a lot as she was practicing as far as like embellishing. And so once she had, and we didn't train her, but I'm just kind of putting words into your story that, that seem to make sense from an observation or an observer's view. But like for me, I didn't really realize or expect this, but I had, you know, I've been figure skating for 30 years. So I think an element of choreography really works well for me. Also, she and I are very similar where we don't necessarily prepare. Like there may be something that I've been working on that I really like how this flows in class. And so that piece may be in there, but I'm not exactly sure what's going to go. And I'm okay with that. Now there are people who prepare a ton. Mm-hmm. And that's okay too, because that's their comfort zone. Not that.
Yeah, just different type of personality.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, as an engineer, I would have to script it out. Yeah, I would. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I've tried to do that. Not any time recently, but I've tried to sort of script things out, and it comes off so inauthentic, and it feels so inauthentic to me. Maybe I don't even know how it comes off, but it doesn't feel natural.
No, and any time I've tried, like, I'm going to do this today. I'm going to organize this and do this. Then you get to class, and you've got, like, a new hip replacement and a...
And this new guy named Dave.
A person who said, by the way, I had a stroke 2 months ago, but my doctor cleared me, and you're like, shit. So you have to... be able to adjust, but that alphabet, quote unquote, that sequence that you've taught in teacher training that is memorized is solid enough that if a person can just repeat that alphabet, they can walk around and take care of the person with the knee. They can help the person modify and without losing the whole train off the tracks.
And they can also say, if you are recovering or if you have a knee issue, then take this modification. And there's not a lot of stress involved with that because they've also learned that in teacher training, you know, like don't go, so, usually it's just don't go so deep, but there are things you can do with blocks and
that's
things.
What she said. Sorry.
These microphones pick up everything right back.
They do. That's why I'm just pretending to whisper.
Okay, I say that all the time and I get in trouble at home for it.
Well, the twirty household is a dirty household, so I don't get in trouble for that.
But like I taught a class last night and quite honestly, I didn't. So a lot of times my classes from class to class aren't really that different, but from week to week, they probably are. But I can honestly tell you, I don't remember what I taught last week. I don't know about you, but like it couldn't have been that different from what I'm teaching now. But even from like power, take my weekends, right? I teach a 75 minute power class on Saturday morning and then I teach slow burn on Sunday morning. It's not that dissimilar. I'll adjust it for slow burn and then I'll adjust it for slow flow. I'll take the intensity.
I've taken a couple of your classes in the same week and I notice in weeks there seem to be repeating elements unless I'm imagining it, but it does seem like, okay, we did that earlier this week, this particular sequence. And the next week it'll be something else.
It could be something, yeah. And that's usually just like kind of what I'm feeling. Sometimes this sounds really weird. I don't know if we ever talk about this, but sometimes I feel like it's a class is a work of art in the making because you don't really know what's going to happen. And I'm very open to that because I'm very comfortable with, like, you know, each class has its own feel.
Its own energy.
And
you
hope that when you go into, or I shouldn't say hope. Hope's probably the wrong word, but like you're going into a Wednesday night power class and like, it's my favorite night of the week. You know, I'm like, I hope everybody's like ready to go and it's going to be great. And sometimes the energy level is ridiculously low and I can't come there with a prepared high energy.
Yeah. It's just whether it's the weather was gray, barometric pressure, it's cold out. All of a sudden people are dragging.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Time changes. The weeks after a time change, the breath is never good, you know? And so,
what about during full moons? You notice anything?
Energy changes, you know, but anyhow, last night I'm not surprised by how it, like the way that it came out, but it just felt really right. And I felt really good about it, but I have no idea if that's how the student feels, you know?
Right, because there's sometimes people are like, great class, and then they leave a Google review or something afterwards, and you left there feeling like you barely held it together.
Oh my gosh, you and I used to talk about this all the time, where like, you're like, God, that's the worst class I've ever taught, and inevitably somebody will reach out and be like,
you changed my life tonight.
So it's one of those, it's a one-sided, to a degree, it's a one-sided conversation. Like, we're doing all the talking. There is feedback, don't get me wrong, but like, you're not sticking around to tell me what you thought about class. If there's 30 people in class, most of them are running out because they are going on with life. And that's how it should be. You know?
And that's why we really do have to think of ourselves as kind of a vessel, a doorman.
Yeah.
Like, to open an experience, but to let the class and the student have the experience.
Absolutely.
So if you answered the next one, do you reuse your yoga routines or is each one unique like a snowflake? It sounds for you guys, everything is unique.
Everything's
cool.
A snowflake-ish.
Yeah.
And also your use of the word routines makes me think of seventh grade cheer tryouts.
What's a yoga routine called if it's not a routine?
It's, yeah, that's that word.
Sequence and teacher training.
Sequence, okay. But you didn't do anything wrong. It's just, yeah. It just struck me that way.
You're not the first person to
routine. Call it a routine.
All right, back in ancient times when yoga was first practiced, what did they call the pose we now call airplane? There certainly weren't any airplanes back then, so. And that leads into the next question about.
Maybe that's a modern pose.
So it is. I believe I could be completely wrong, and I'm sure somebody will correct me. We call airplane pose Dehikasana in the Sanskrit, but I really think that it just grew into a hybrid from Warrior III, Virudhabrasana III, which is looks like airplane, only your arms are reached forward like Superman, and you're sort of a T-shape.
Okay.
So then airplane, you sort of lift your heart and airplane your arms, but...
So the origins had a Sanskrit or whatever name, and then people added, that's like an airplane.
Yes,
so we'll call
it
an airplane.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All of the, these poses have Sanskrit names first, and then people decided it looks like a frog.
Okay.
Or it looks like a whatever. Happy baby.
Well, is there a governing board that determines what an official yoga pose is and what should be called? Are newer yoga poses invented? What pose would or did you guys invent?
There's no governing body, for sure.
Right.
And Western yoga is so all over the map. There's so many varieties, so many words, which is good and bad.
Well, and you probably can answer this very well, but how many times have you gone to practice at a studio out of town and the same word is used for a different pose? And I'm not talking about Warrior Ones or anything like
no,
that.
No, absolutely. I'm trying to think of one right now, but...
Probably got a squat and horses.
Yes, yes.
How could those be different?
Because some teachers don't teach the drop of the hips all the way down. They'll just go as far as the knees.
Oh, okay.
They call it Buddha squat, maybe?
Yeah, I've heard it Buddha.
Sometimes they're the same.
Right, you won't know, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually never heard Legs Up the Wall or Viparita Karani called waterfall until... y'all, yeah. Never.
Huh.
So have you guys invented poses?
Now
purposely or accidentally?
Yeah, I'm sure, but not...
I don't think any of us have invented, but I think in the course of trying out different transitions and things, there's a, I call it Butterbridge or Bridgerfly, and it's a sort of a hybrid with you're laying on your back like you would set up for bridge. But then Supta Baddha Konasana, reclined butterfly pose. So your knees are open, soles of the feet together, but then lift like you would into bridge.
Oh.
It's tough.
I call that too, but I don't call it butter.
I just make up shit as I go. But I love that because it's hard and it's a great inner thigh, hip stretch kind of thing.
So actually,
but I won't take credit for inventing it.
There's a variation of... horse that I call pretty frequently that I'm sure that you've done where
she's getting up
folks. Getting up
you're not. Here and I'll say drop your shoulder in and then take it back, left shoulder in, take a breath in, pull your left shoulder back. So
I would call that a Jackson 5 dance move.
Vince Ketter.
So you guys are making stuff
am I right
up
yeah
Vince Ketter said he feels like Beyonce. So we have started
Vince Ketterer looks a little like Beyonce
know,
now that
right?
you mention it.
He, so we call it the Beyonce now.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I
like
guess
it, yeah.
we have invented, even James calls it the Beyonce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes we'll just joke, we'll come up with something and then just call it. Sometimes if we're in a spinal twist at the end, I'll just throw in snug as a bug in a rug asana to see if anybody notices
so
that
asana
that's.
Asana means pose or seat.
Yeah. And to see if anybody notices that that's not actually a real word. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes things just go, did you ever tell a joke and nobody laughs?
Oh, sure, of course. And then there's it's not a pose that I made up, but I do think I take credit for inventing nothing else, but I think I might have come up with the word vinyashole. For the people that like to put an extra vinyasa, an extra push-up, an extra whatever. Uh-huh. And I mean it with love, because sometimes I do it myself.
I'm a vinyasshole. We should probably get that in a shirt, too.
That's the first time I heard of that.
Christmas is coming.
Are there days, as an instructor, you would say, I don't really want to do this today?
Yep.
How often?
Probably as often as, like, you're not wanting to go to work or get out of bed. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
the amazing difference is, though, that within minutes, you're completely changed around. Like, we never leave thinking, thank God that's over. At least speaking strictly for myself.
No, as soon as I start teaching, I'm totally fine. Like, I always tell the trainees that I love to practice yoga. Don't get me wrong. I really, really do. It's so important to me. But you have to be so present. You have to be so in the moment as a teacher, because if you're not, you could lose the entire class. Now, on the mat, if you get lost because you're thinking about what you need to do after class, worst that can happen is you're a couple poses behind or you know, probably nobody notices. Right. Like, it's not the end of the world. But if I'm thinking about not remembering to, or that I, you know, did this or did I do that or what do I need to do after class, and I lose my place, especially with all the weird things that I do, I could lose the feeling of the class. So
are yoga instructors extroverts then, by and large, rather than introverts? Or, I mean, because as an engineer, I'm introvert. I mean, I sat behind my computer 8 hours a day, not even meetings and whatnot. But I was fine with that. If I had to go in front of teach classes every day, I think that would consume me.
No, I do know quite a number of introvert yoga teachers, and it does make for a very different experience, which is why, as I always say, please go to other classes, even when somebody's subbing a class. I'm very loud and usually extroverted, high energy, a lot of talking. There's a lot to be said for an experience that I can't even give.
Right.
I mean, I've had some wonderful, there's people I can't believe are yoga teachers because I've never heard a peep out of them that I'm surprised they'd be willing to stand in front of a room and say anything. But there's such a calming, peaceful, there's a vocal difference, there's an energy difference, and I love it and I need it.
Yeah.
But I can't do it.
And like Mary Beth mentioned before, we're just vessels, is that what you said? We're sharing this practice, so we're not there to entertain you. We're there to support you, to guide you, to keep you safe, but
I guess kind of like a school teacher could be an introvert or an extrovert. I mean, obviously the fun ones are extroverts, but no, I'm just kidding.
But it's going to be a different experience. And, you know, Mary Beth and I are clearly both extroverts, although I do think I do have an introverted side, but like,
there's a word that's ambivert, and that's what I think we are. It's like when we're on, but when I'm home, like, I will shut the blinds and pretend to not be home if you knock on my door, because I need that downtime.
You guys heard of Myers-Briggs, right?
Yeah.
And there's a spectrum, right?
Right,
so
sure.
I'm an introvert, but I'm just on the left side. I, you know, not very far introverted, but, you know, so that means I can, like I'm doing now, coming out of my shell and talking.
Right. So. Yeah, and so look at Susie. Susie, I feel is very introverted, but she's probably not far on that scale too. But she's so quiet and like she's like this, I don't know, she's just amazing. And Vince always jokes because like Susie will kick your butt, you know, like Susie's classes are pretty challenging.
Quietly kick your butt.
Vince says that Susie's like, hello, friends.
Well, she's got the best, I told her this the other day, she's got the best yoga voice. I mean, it's so silky smooth and calming and yet direct, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Susie's very amazing. She's pretty special.
Okay, let's go to the dark side. Are there days or certain classes where as an instructor you say, I'm going to stick it to them today? Or certain people. No.
I don't think so.
No, I mean, that would be problematic. However, if stick it to me means that a whole bunch of people come in really hyped for a hard class, that we kind of do that together. Yeah. And then there is, you know, a danger of being a person at the front of the room would be an egocentric situation where maybe somebody comes in that, you know, he's like a, let's say it's a guy that's just a dick, and he's always
why a guy? Why man?
I'm just saying.
Okay, just saying.
I'm just saying as a woman, like a guy, let's say a guy comes in and thinks he's the shit.
Okay.
I'm not going to say it doesn't enter your mind to be like, oh, yeah?
I knew it.
Buddy?
I knew it.
Let's roll. But, you know, that wouldn't be, that would be evil and wrong and so right.
I understand where you're going with the question, and I try to meet that person with compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how I try to actively respond versus react. And so may I bring a challenge to the class? Somewhat like Mary Beth said, sure, but...
And this is why I quite literally pray before every class, let me serve from humility and not ego, because it bears repeating in my head every time.
But I feel like I do that so that, because sometimes that's what somebody needs, because, and I'm not saying this to learn a lesson. Mm-mm. I'm saying that they're in some kind of negative space. They have to be if they're, you know, like kind of giving off this egotistical vibe, and they need something to break them out of it. And if somebody has like a super advanced practice, they're going to need maybe something to, that they have to think about a lot to get them to not think about whatever's making them be that way, I guess, if that makes
sense. Yeah, so it's not even the physical challenge of making it super hard, but making it somehow different, knocking them off course somehow maybe.
Right. And these are tools I think that yoga teachers have, or they should have, you know, that they, because we do see lots of different types of personalities. Mm-hmm. And Mary Beth and I talk a lot about humility and how humbling it is to be a yoga teacher and to like be in charge of all these people. But I also, it's hard for me, but I do it. Keep in mind things that I've learned on the mat, that I'm not that different than other people. And we all go through very similar human experiences. Now the experiences are unique to each of us, but if you talk to people, you know, I have like a library of self-help books, and I used to think that every single one was written just for me. Like, oh, I found myself in this one. Well, when they're all like New York Times bestsellers,
you realize,
like, oh, millions of people are, this stuff is resonating with them. So I err on the side of us. We can all be jerks, you know, like us all kind of being in this same human boat and trying to relate to that versus like stick it, punish people, I guess. I don't know if punish is the right word. It's hard. I mean, it's hard for teachers too, because we're human too, you know, like it, and when we're handling a room full of people, it doesn't matter what class type it is. It's,
and because it also enters into our brain, not that it's something we can control, but it enters under my brain. I have a new person here who's here for the first time, let's say a middle-aged woman, and I've got that guy here too.
Yeah.
And I want him to feel good, and I want her to feel good, and that's not the easiest thing. So we, there's a lot that has to go on.
Then there's the basic class, and then an hour-long hot power, then the 75 minutes. So each one you have to ratchet, you know, tone it up or down, depending, you know. And sometimes it's not always clear what more to add, or is it pretty clear? And you know how to delineate between the classes.
So going back to question 11, this is why we can't exactly plan class.
Plan class,
Yeah. Okay. Well, when you tell the class you will be giving hands-on instructions or corrections and ask people to raise their hand if they don't want it, does anyone? And if the class is crowded, how do you remember who raised their hand?
This is a great question because, yes, people will. In fact, we used to have a student who had a laminated card. She had had back surgery, and she just took it out of her hands. She had a card, "Don't touch me." She would leave it by her mat. I have an injury. I would be terrible at remembering who raised their hand. So I say it differently. I just say, if I'm going to do hands-on assist today, if you don't like that and you see me coming towards you, I usually say just elbow me in the teeth. But what I really mean is like, give me the like...
Flip you the bird.
Yeah, give me the like no bueno, because the last thing you want is now to... Was it her that raised her hand or her? And now you go, touch somebody who, for any reason, whether it's injury or even sort of mental trauma, you don't want to touch somebody who doesn't want to be touched.
So I'm actually surprised to hear that. I find that it's very rare that somebody will say that. And so it's easy to remember who does. And if there are multiple people, it's usually never, ever more that, like, having two is really rare and having three is, like, off the charts. But there's this paranoia of, like, oh, my God, I want to, you know, absolutely remember that, like, you just, you don't want to upset them. So it's usually pretty easy to remember.
I will say also that currently the style of class that I'm teaching, so I'm doing mostly the slow flows.
Yeah.
And that's a different population too. And I feel that there are times that a slow flow person doesn't think themselves necessarily capable of doing an advanced pose. And I think they may be afraid I'm going to assist them into one and that they're going to fail. So I do think the mindset might be a little bit different.
And there's a difference between adjustments and assists. And we probably need to address that better as teachers, but adjustments are when you are kind of gently nudging, you know, a knee or a shoulder or
knocking the person
knocking a grown man over on his ass.
Assists are when you're making the pose usually feel really good in a way that a person can't do by themselves.
A deepening somehow
So,
and it's important to note, and we don't say it often enough, that those aren't necessarily corrective.
Right. Not the assist.
Occasionally something is corrective. Your knee is looking like it might, you know, get damaged, but mostly it's not corrective.
Right.
It's more just of a connection, connective.
Just like yesterday, I think you were telling me about what we were side angle pose when I went under to do the bind.
Yeah.
And I can't quite get under properly, but I got as close as I could. And after, you told me, you know, the right way. It's like, yeah, I know that. I just can't do that, you know. So I love the hands-on assist, but there are certain things. It's like, I hear you. Or what's that dancer pose when you reach back and grab?
Yeah.
I kept reaching the wrong way around. It's like, I don't give a crap. I'm just going to reach in. Because it's hard for me to grab my foot.
Because it's some success.
See what he's doing?
Yeah.
Twisting.
Yeah.
You're twisting. You're too much.
The thing about a careful assist, speaking specifically for a bind, and that's a great one, that side angle, half bind or full bind, even leading up into a bird of paradise. As long as it's safe and you're not causing pain to somebody, if a teacher assists you and you're able to get the bind that you can't do yourself, like, your body remembers, there's muscle memory, and then eventually you probably are going to be able to do that as long as it's safe for you. So those can be really great. It's hard because we got out of the habit with COVID, and then getting back in is just dicey. I'm trying to, but it's...
Do you always offer hands-on adjustment assist?
No. Some days it just doesn't come up. It doesn't feel right at all.
Same here.
And then other days I'm all about it. It's kind of strange.
But that's good though, because I feel like if you really don't feel like giving assist that day, it comes across in the touch.
Right. You don't want your touch or your energy to be like...
creepy.
Yeah, ho-hum, here we go again. And I don't love when I'm in a class and I can feel the class or the teacher dragging something on so that they can touch everybody equally either.
Mm.
You know, like, I'm going to adjust this six people on this side and this six people on this side.
Are you
I don't love that.
Are talking about, like, when people are in Shavasana and it's like a 20-minute Shavasana that makes the class go over time because the teacher's giving neck massages?
No, that's a totally different topic, because the neck massage is a little piece of heavenly bliss that cannot be done without.
Well, we'll talk about the towels on the board at the end here.
Yes, but, right.
So has anybody got upset about any hands-on corrections you guys have done? Or they smacked your hand, get away from me?
Occasionally somebody will give me a little body language. And then often I'll find out after the fact that they'll say, well, I had neck surgery 2 months ago. So this is a shout out that if you have any physical thing going on, please tell your yoga teacher. If you're pregnant, Dave, or if you've had surgery or anything going on.
I have a broke shoulder, so if I come to your class...
I wouldn't want to suddenly help you with this bind I see you going for and then have you tell me after the fact, I mean, I had a woman once, she used to be a regular, and I was adjusting for weeks,
exactly,
maybe months. And at some point she said, you know, like 20 years ago, I had a big surgery where they carved the front of my throat open and put a plate in the back of my neck. And I was like, okay. So I remember I went on our teacher's Facebook page and I'm like, this person has a plate in their neck, by the way. So I just want everybody to know, because that's important information. Mm. Like, I would never want to start to assist that person into a headstand or something. And the person might not know that a headstand is contraindicated. So communication is good.
Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes when students are, I think this happens when mostly they're new. Well, a couple of things happen. When you ask if anybody doesn't want hands-on adjust or assist, raise your hand. Now, I always ask that in child's pose so that the answer is private, you know. But if somebody's brand new, they often pop their head up like, and it's more, I don't think it's curiosity. I think it's curiosity of like, I don't know what's going on here. Like, is this something I should say no to? Like, how many people are saying no?
Yeah, what do they mean by hands-on assist?
Yeah, but like down dog, for example, I like to do the assist where I come up from in front of you and push your hips up and back. And a lot of times newer people are thinking that I'm trying to make them shorten their down dog. So they'll walk their hands back or something, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but are they getting upset about the assist? Not really. I think they're just not understanding how to receive the assist, which is okay. Cause it's like, if you've never gotten one before, or, you know, or you think, you might think, am I doing this pose correctly? And all of a sudden there I am, or there a teacher is, and, you know, correcting the
pose. Yeah. And it's like an eagerness to be helpful. Whereas we should be clearer and say, hey, you stay doing exactly what you're doing and let me assist.
Yes. And that's why, like, I don't know how you are with it, but I don't do a ton of assists once we're moving one breath, one movement. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll save the assist for when you're in the pose for a bit, so that it's not like a quick in and out. And I might have time in case that person walks their hands back to say, no, you're good. Mm-hmm. You know, and that might cost the rest of the class one more inhale and exhale and down dog, but not, it's not going to throw anything off. So for all of our listeners, you should be very excited to know that we are bringing Dave Hoffman back for another episode to continue these questions.
Well, let's see how this one goes over first. But yeah, I got 20 more questions here.
I know you do.
Want to play 20 questions?
Mm-hmm.
So, Mary Beth, take us out.
Oh, I we're stopping before that, because I think the question 19 is a great place to end.
Oh, okay. We'll go one more, and then Mary Beth could take us out.
I've been dying to say this out loud in one of our classes. I haven't yet because, again, I'm kind of new. But at the beginning of class, when you ask if there are any requests, has anyone shouted, Freebird?
I know one person who has.
Oh, really? Is it you?
It is me.
I don't know if the younger people would understand what we're referring to.
And also nobody laughed, but I thought it was hilarious.
I would have squealed.
Little did I know. Also, this is unsolicited, but I will say I have a personal dislike for when a yoga teacher asks in a full room of people if anybody has anything they want to work on today. That's all I'll say. I'm just going to leave that right there. Any special requests?
I ask most times with the knowledge that I'm probably not going to get an answer, and I'm okay with that. But
have you ever gotten an answer?
Yeah. Okay. Every once in a while, someone will say, and I remember this one woman very clearly said, it was like a Monday morning. She's like, I helped my neighbor move big rocks from their retention bed or something all weekend. She's like, I can barely move. And like, so there were a couple of extra things that I threw in there, and I'm so glad she asked. I think I do it more in hopes of making the class comfortable, maybe not necessarily looking. If somebody has an answer, that's great, but I just don't expect one anymore. But like,
there's always some asshole who asks for core work.
Right. Well, we're working the core the whole time. That's usually my answer.
I wouldn't want to suggest anything because I wouldn't want to make the whole class do what I need personally.
You know, but here's the thing. So say this core sequence that we learn in teacher training, right? Our most common requests our low back, hips, and shoulders.
Okay.
That core sequence addresses those things. And so it might not change the class. Your request may not change the class. It may change the cues. And yes, for experienced teachers, there are some things that we might throw in because we know, you know, I can slide this shoulder rinse in here, or I can do this here, or whatever. But any yoga class is going to work almost the entire body, if not the whole entire body.
It should be pretty comprehensive.
Single, yeah. Mm. But I, it's funny that you want to yell Freebird, because there was a teacher who I used to go to every once in a while that she was very like playlist oriented, and she would put together a new playlist and have, you know, it's two for Tuesday kind of thing. And so before her classes, she would have any requests. And I always thought she was talking about a song, and I was like, how can she, like, if you
request change it
a song,
on the fly,
change that on the fly, which you could do. It didn't occur to me until years later that she might've been talking about poses or like body parts or, you know, soreness or something like that. So that's
a good place to pause, because when we pick up again with Dave, we'll go right into music. I think that's question 20.
Yep. So we will have Dave Hoffman back.
Dave, do you have anything else to say in this, your first foray into podcasting?
I was nervous coming in here. I've never been on radio before, whatever this is called. but
we tickled him, and now he's fine.
Yeah, we're fine. No, this has been
so
fun.
So you will come back?
Yeah, sure. I got questions right. I need answers to, for crying out loud.
All right, good. And then you can keep adding on to it.
Mm-hmm.
Joyce, anything else?
I'm good right now.
All right, we're done.
Fine.